You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 9, Episode 32 coming your way this week. Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you as ever. We're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound lighting and AV solutions. Yeah, quite a bit to get through on this week's pod. Gaz, how are you keeping?
Yeah, pretty good. Not a loss, but a bit under the weather, but I'll be fighting fit now.
Fighting fit for Lisbon.
Fighting fit for Lisbon, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I've just came out of bloody Lisbon, so I think it might be just a bit weary from travelling.
Oh, bless.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't get to a game for Friday, did you?
No, it was at a wedding. I tried to go to a game.
You were in Lisbon, but
there was a bit of a day two situation for the wedding, so parked me football and grow for the weekend. But great win for the town.
Yeah, back-to-back wins for Longford for the first time since, I think, July, I was told, leaving the ground. So there you go. We'll get to that later on. But as I said, we've got a lot to get through because we've got to review everything that happened last week and plenty happened, particularly down at the RSC. But we've also got this week the league games, we've got cup games, we've got European games. So there's an awful lot to get through. And we'll probably talk about Ireland before we go as well ahead of that game in Lisbon next week.
Sure, we'll save that to next week, won't we?
I'm making a week of it, to be honest, because I think we all know the football situation is going to be fairly miserable, so you have to try and find some sort of silver lining. So I think 6 days in Lisbon is probably...
When are you going?
Tuesday morning.
Ah, sure, we'll do it Monday. We'll do it live!
Yeah, got a 50 quid flight out on the Tuesday, so... You know, so might as well make a few days of it.
Man of shite. Go on.
Right, look, let's start with the big game from last Friday. That was Rovers against Bowes. Now, I didn't see this because I went to Bray, just so you'll be happy to know. I did go to the Carlisle. Had a few games I could have gone to last week, but I went to the Carlisle and I was duly rewarded with a great performance from Longford. But I was coming back from the Carlisle and listening to League of Ireland late night and everybody was just talking about what a brilliant game this was, what a brilliant advert. I watched back the highlights today. I didn't get watching. I wanted to try and watch as much as this as I could, but you can't obviously watch it back on LOI TV because it was on terrestrial television, so that's not ideal. But what a brilliant game. Three brilliant goals as well.
Yeah, the quality of the goals was absolutely fantastic. Great to see the header for Bowes. Really lovely cross right into the danger zone and absolutely buried past McGinty in the goals. So...
I think we've said before, there's something about a head of goal, isn't there? When you get really
it's lovely. It's lovely. Yeah. Absolutely just blasted by him. You know, and that was obviously such an important goal to draw at the game level. Particularly, I kind of thought there was a bit of an inevitability of Rovers winning this one, but with this fixture all season, Bowes have come out on top in the three goals of it so far, so you're never just fully sure of what's going to happen, but you know, it was just a great game with great goals in for all three. Really enjoyed Burke's goal. He just creates a bit of space for himself, and I think he's without just, you know, totally blowing it up his hole. He probably, there isn't that many players that would have been able to do that. You know, bide his time, and make the space for himself. I thought the defending was a bit poor, a bit standoffish, but still created the space. I was able to smack it into the far bottom corner, just out of the reach of the Bowes keeper. So
it was a great. I have to say, I actually really enjoyed Mandreu's goal. I thought that was a much nicer goal in terms of the build up and the finish. But I definitely fully appreciate and agree what you're saying about Burke there. I suppose that leads us back to a conversation we were having on recent podcasts. Who has been the best player in the league this season? And we put this out on Twitter after last week's show and we got a huge reaction to it. So I'm just going to read out some of the tweets we got. Now, the names we mentioned in our own tweet were Burke, Duffy and Healy. And a lot of people obviously agreed with those three names. But we did get some other names. And PXP, who's a Derry fan, said, Sam Todd has been a revelation after his disastrous first day of performance. His goal line clearance on Friday against Shells has to be among the best tackles I've ever seen in the league. Often overlooked, but deserves great credit for his improvement this season. I thought that was a really good shout. Daniel Shields said Duffy 100%. Christopher Miles said Connor Keeley. Now, we'll get the draw at it and their draw.
And we did give him an honourable mention, to be fair.
We did. We'll get the draw at it and their draw with Derry in a minute. Drogheda almost got the result that Rovers needed to be champions Friday, but just got away from them. Brian McNally, are you joking? Seeing Keeley in Sligo last Friday, good defender, but not very good with the ball at his feet. Drogheda suit him, hard working, but I would hate to watch them every week, which I thought was very harsh on Drogheda. Rory said, Healy, Devoy, Melia, Burke. I'd even say Joey and Nang. I wouldn't agree with a Nang, but I'd agree with the rest of the shouts there. Brian, he says, to be fair, it has to be a hoop. Enda Curran, our good old pal, says people are forgetting how good Keeley has been, but again, we've given him honourable mentions on the podcast. Sam, a regular listener, a Blues fan. Honohan, Healy, Devoy, Duffy and Keeley. KM2 Archive Killian, who's well known on the old Twitter sphere. Anyone who doesn't have Devoy in their top three doesn't watch the league. I suppose he is one name we did admit last week, Gary. So what have you made of Dawson Devoy's performances this season?
Yeah, look, he has been obviously a massive player for Bowes. Kind of was a bit underwhelmed with him when he came back initially, but he's been absolutely sensational so far this season. To be very, very critical, maybe consistency not 100% there. He definitely
hasn't been as consistent as Matt Healy, for example, I don't think, in my own book.
Yeah. I think that might be fair, but like his contributions for Bowes this season, like you look at, what's it, the goal that started the comeback in Talla the first time this season, you know, key bits of play that he's involved with, like he's definitely up there, certainly in the top five, I think, this season. And I know there's a lot of, like, and someone mentioned it in your, like list of comments there, was it's going to be dominated by Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah.
But I think Devoy would be in and around. Like, for his, he has made a lot of contributions this season. And, you know, has dragged Bowes into winning positions on a number of occasions. So, I don't know. He's going to, I know we don't preempt the, you know, one of the review pods or whatever that we do later on in the season, but it's definitely going to be a difficult one to pick, even a top five. You know, Honohan was a good mention. I don't think we even mentioned him last week. So a lot of lads vying for the coveted BTS player of the year.
Yeah, definitely. Just looking through some more of these comments. Kay Keane, who's a Bulls fan, says Burke only plays half the time. Healy and Devoy very good this season, but I think Duffy is the best. Derry would be way down without him, and I think I'd agree with that. The Nacho Man, Andy Cabbage. Matt Healy has consistently been one of the best midfielders in the league this season. Other midfielders have drifted in and out of form, but Matt has been on top throughout. He gets my vote. Kieran McDermott says Matt Healy. Ian Campbell, as a Galway fan, I hate to say it, but Elding has been immense. I would also like to put Asua in, as he's been fantastic in a team that hasn't been the greatest, sadly. I have been very impressed with Asua Galway this season. Anna says, bin them all off and give Connor Keeley his flowers. Darren Devine, Michael Duffy number one, Devoy Honohan, Elding, Keeley and Healy make up the rest of the shortlist. Al with a shout for Harry Wood. Never-ending player of the year is Devoy. Lord Chuckles Academy, Sligo bias coming through, but Elding has to be up there. I'd throw Hakiki's name in the hat as well. Young Noonan and Amelia are flying. The league full of young talent, young and old. Even old Amund is still partial to a goal. A-Doc says Matt Healy 100%. So a good range of names, as you said. It's going to be very competitive for the team of the year.
Yeah, but I think it's great. It's a very good point that, like, there's a lot of good young talent around the place. Like, there's players there that we mightn't have been considering in that conversation, but you're like, you know, ooh, yeah, I might include him. You know, Akiki has made a huge contribution for Sligo. Not saying that as player of the year level, but, like, he has, you know, he has been sensational since he went in. Elding has been
immense.
All year. You know, there's a lot of lads around the place that would have genuine shouts. And as you said, like, we're going to have a very, very strong team of the year. one of the strongest, I'd say, in a good while.
And just picking up again, you said about some of the young players there. We mentioned Tamelia, Elding, Noonan as well. Then you look into the first division as well and some of the young talent that's coming through there. I know Dundalk have a lot of young lads. One of them already got a move to England, and Sean Keogh, Vinnie Leonard's going to go probably at the end of the season. We're talking about players like Billy O'Neill all the time. Some really, really good young talent in the country at the moment, which can only be a positive.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose like there'll be teams in the Premier Division that might be taking chance or, you know, taking, you know, maybe less of a chance of taking some of the players from the First Division. Can they make the step up, you know, from a team that might be getting promoted? You know, there is a lot of players that you'd be looking forward to seeing play against them, say, Longford or whatever.
Yeah. We'll move it on then. Drogheda 1, Derry City 1. It looked like for a long time that Drogheda were going to do the job here and get the 3 points for their European push and help Shamrock Rovers win the title on the night. Another goal for Dara Kareem. We spoke about him on last week's pod, but Mullen got the equaliser for Derry City. Drogheda, though, will be sick because when they were 1-0 up, they had a huge amount of chances to go 2-0 up and put the game to bed. Didn't take them, and yeah. The goal they concede is a disappointing one. We mentioned Conor Keeley there. Probably one of the first mistakes I can remember him making all season. He kind of falls over his own feet. Now he's not the only one that's culpable. The defence kind of opened up like the Red Sea a little bit, which is very Drogheda like. And even Luke Dennison, who's had an amazing season, and I think for many would probably be the goalkeeper of the year, probably palms it back into a hot area, and Mullen gets the equaliser. And it just felt like 2 points dropped here for Drogheda.
Yeah, it was funny. You mentioned Conor Keeley, who does make a bit of a hames of his footwork. He actually set up the goal. He chested down the free into the box for Kareem to boot into the back of the net to put them one up.
Yeah, and just on that, actually, last week when he got the assist for the second goal against Shells on the Monday night, we were saying, like, who else was it going to be targeted with the ball? Only Conor Keeley, and we were so surprised that, you know, Shells were caught like that. This is even worse because it's straight onto the chest of Conor Keeley in the air.
Like, down on the ditties, absolutely. Like, it's absolutely crazy. But it, look, I don't care what anybody says. I've been really critical of the back line for Derry for a long time.
You've been critical of one lad in particular.
Mark Connolly.
And it was him that got shoved aside like a bag of spuds by Conor Keeley.
Honest to God, yeah. And only a kilo bag of spuds. There was absolutely no work required for Conor Keeley to get him out of the way. He could chest it down. Kareem was standing right there. And then it's the whole hands in the air, flapping shit that Connolly loves to do. It's not personal.
He made an unbelievable goal line clearance later in the game where he nearly decapitated. Well,
should he have been on the pitch?
No, I don't think so. Now, again, this isn't in the highlights package. So this goes to show we do our research. We actually watch back large chunks of these games. Joshua, there's a bad back pass played by Derry and Joshua Thomas is about to latch onto it and Mark Connolly cleans him out. And at the time, Brian Maher was out of his goal, a long way out of the goal.
Yeah.
For me, it's a denial of a goal scoring opportunity. It's a red card and he only gets a yellow there. I thought that was a woeful decision from the referee.
Yeah, and actually, you know, we were talking about that before and I wasn't sure. I'm actually positive.
Yeah.
In the last few minutes. Like it was kind of him and hawing. But actually, it's simple as it doesn't matter what type of tackle it is. Thomas gets to the ball first.
Yeah.
He knocks it by him. He's gone. He's finished.
Well, he didn't. I think
you're probably being kind to the ref, is it? Do you think?
Yeah, from speaking to people, apparently the ref said that Thomas didn't have control of the ball, but he's clearly getting to that ball. And if he does, he has an open goal. Now, whether he's going to score from there or not, that's not the rule. It's denial of a goal scoring opportunity, a clear goal scoring opportunity. He's getting a shot in on goal there.
Yes.
If he's not taken out. That is a red card.
Yes. And actually, it was... you see Nathan Collins foul on the striker for...
I did.
Man United.
Yeah.
He should have got red there.
Oh, that was... And with VAR, like, that was incredible. And it took 3 or 4 minutes to look at it and still didn't send them off.
And still didn't send them off. Because, like, he would... He wasn't in control of the ball because he got taken out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thomas was the same. Unfortunately for Thomas, we're going to unfortunately talk about him in a bit of a negative light because he missed a heap of bloody chances.
He did.
he was so wasteful in front of goal. Now, and like you'd say on one hand, oh, Maher did well, and you know, the usual old shite. But like, I think Thomas gave a real opportunity in most cases for Maher to make the save. And, you know, you can't really do that. There was one ball that was tried to be cleared away. It actually just popped up. Thomas ran off. He chested it down. Takes way too long. And Conley does well to actually come and cover. It was just, it didn't sit, he didn't control it right first, and the chances slipped away. But that would have put them two up. And I suppose at that point, you would have I would have never really considered Derry coming back to get two goals to tie the game. There's another chance where just very early on in the second half, Thomas gets his boot on it, but it flicks up and just a handy catch for Maher. But yeah, the goal is lucky, I would say.
I thought so. They did end the game well, though, Derry. They finished probably the slightly stronger, did force Dennison into a couple of saves. Michael Duffy had a few shots from range, so they ended the game well. But I think that period where Drogheda were 1-0 up, don't take the chances, and that decision doesn't go their way. I think that was the crucial part of the game. Shelburne 2, Waterford 1 ended up being the final act of John Coleman's short reign, 5 months or so in charge at Waterford, and very quickly shown the door after this defeat. They've fallen into the relegation playoff position, as I predicted quite a few months ago now, I think.
Yeah, I think as recently enough, I didn't think I thought the gap would be enough for them, to be honest, and I was clearly wrong. Not really to say here. Like, is there any real point in talking about John Coleman's tenure?
There is, because we've had some very bad shouts on the pod this year, but I think one thing we were fairly consistent on very early in the season, there was a lot of unrest setting in at Waterford. After a decent start, there was a lot of talk about Keith Long, and we said, this is crazy. You're doing absolutely fine. It's your second season up. You're doing okay. Finish seventh or eighth. That's a good season. But there just seemed to be a twitchiness. The finger was on the trigger the whole time, and they eventually pulled it, got rid of Keith Long. And I'm not saying that they wouldn't be in this position with Keith Long. The same issues have persisted. The awful defending, giving away goals. But they would be in no worse of a position if Keith Long had stayed there. I would have far more belief that Keith Long would have found a way to dig them out of trouble. Particularly if he was still there for the window and he got support in the window, he knows the league, he can get players in, get some battle-hardened pros. Whereas they've got a lad in from England, as we all expected they would. They've brought in a heap of players from England. Half of them have been flops, and they are where they are.
Yeah, it's kind of, I'm not, it doesn't fully remind me of Bertram's time. But you know, there was a lot of lads brought in from the UK back then, and it obviously didn't work out in the end. Now, Bertram was relieved of his duties the week of the playoffs, which was another interesting one. But
piece of League of Ireland heritage, that.
Yeah, that was glorious stuff. That was a great time. And then showing up at the game and everything in Richmond Park was just quality. But like,
his name did actually come into my head when I seen Coleman was gone. I thought, could it happen, the comeback? But no, not to be.
Well, it should have changed owner since then. So obviously the bit of a connection missed there. But look, I think could they have done this a while ago? Like
it almost seems
for a long time. Like,
yeah, they've dropped into ninth, and it's just like this stinks of panic to me. I think Coleman was a poor appointment to begin with, and I spoke to somebody within the league very soon after he was appointed, and they kind of had knowledge of him from players that had, I think, played with him in England, and they didn't think this was a good appointment at all, and they've been proven right. And I actually texted them the other day and said that was a great shout on Coleman,
because like if you have to go back to July,
yeah. But just to answer your question, I think they've slipped into the relegation playoff position, and they're like, we have to do something now. It's a pure reactive response to get rid of him.
And yeah, I don't know where to go from here. Like, big job on for the new lad. What's his name? Lawler, Matt Lawler.
Yeah. Well, he had left the club, hadn't he? When Coleman came in, he was interim, and he left, and he's back now. So
all is forgiven.
It's strange. It's a strange setup. Like,
yeah, it is. Yeah, good win for Shells though. You know, they nearly made a bags of it. I thought the finish
I didn't realize. So this makes it a bit more. This makes a bit more sense. He was a first team coach at Fleetwood, and he's left Fleetwood to go back to go to Waterford again.
Well, has he left Fleetwood really? Yeah, he just shows up at a different training ground every day now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I really don't like this to me to you. You know, throwing a different jersey every week. I've talked about it before. The FEI have a lot on their plate. Make no mistake about that. But that's something that is hard rectified because it's two different countries. But like, you know, there's something that we can do to say, nah, we're not having this. Do you know what I mean? They need to do something about it. But yeah, still a good result for Shelburne.
Yeah,
I thought the goal for Conan Noonan was really well taken. A bit statuesque defending. Ball kind of comes in and it's just kind of no one really attacks the ball strongly enough. Paddy Barr tries to get there, doesn't get there, and it's just sneaked into the corner.
I mean, it's another game Waterford have played well in, created loads of chances, but they give away a ridiculous penalty. I mean, I could nearly understand the decision to stick a leg out there if it's Ali Coote running onto the ball. It's Harry Wood. It was feckin' Paddy Barrett.
Yeah.
What was he going to do? Like,
Yeah. I know what you're saying. But like, yeah, how many times have you seen that type of penalty given away?
Yeah.
You know, 1,000 times we've seen like that, you know, short ball into the box and the player tries to go around the corner and he is well taken out of it. So stupid penalty giveaway, but they've been at stupid shit all year. So this is just another chapter in it.
Yeah, well, we'll see if Lawler can turn it around. Galway did what they had to do. They beat Cork City 2-1 at home, and Stephen Walsh with a couple of goals. Doesn't score all too many, but these could be two of the biggest he'll ever score in a Galway jersey.
I've heard that chapter before being said for goals from Stephen Walsh for Galway. But look, obviously, absolutely vital 3 points for Cork. There's a bit of talk for the first one, ball into the box, a bit of chirping about the keeper being fouled.
No, really not for me. I thought the keeper was poor on the night, to be honest. He wasn't decisive in situations like that at all.
Yeah, like obviously, look, it's not great. I think it was Patrick Hickey that got his nut on it to head it on towards goal.
Yeah,
the keeper was up complaining, looking for a foul, and
yeah, no, not for me.
Never, no. But yeah, look, it was not an unsurprising result. I have to say, the equaliser from Cork was class.
Oh, what a goal, Alex Noonan, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, just giving a bit of space. He wasn't just under enough pressure, allowed the shot to be taken. And if you look back at the highlights, I think Johan was probably the closest, and he's actually taken steps backwards. If you look back, you'd see it on the highlights for anyone that cares that much. But like, you know, you're fighting for your life here. You know, you have to be a bit more decisive and a bit more, you know, defensively minded. You can't be just letting lads take shots on in that fashion. I thought that was quite poor, but look, they got it done. They got the equaliser or the winner just before half time, and that was it. Thought Galway were relatively good value for the win, would you say?
Yeah, I think so.
You're finally doing something when they need to do it against the worst team in the division. I'm not sure how much hope you'd hold out, you know, going forward for that aspect, but
yeah, they've got a tough run in, at home to Bowes, at home to Drogheda, away to Tyne Rovers, but the title race will be over by then. Will it go down to that last game, Waterford Galway, or will it be decided by then?
Very hard to know. That, like, we've a bit of a, you know, if John Combe was still there, I'd be like, no, I'd be brown bread by then. I'd say
they've got a tough run in as well, Waterford.
Who do they have next?
They're a home to Drogheda, a home to Derry, away to Pats, and then it's the decider then.
Mm. just hard to believe we're plowed through another season already.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Look, I think one of the best matches of Waterford this season was when Lawler was leading them. So
I think it'll go to the final game, to be honest. I don't see them. Yeah. If they both picked up one win each between now and the end of the season, they've probably done well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Like a Galway, like is beating Cork at home, you know, the catalyst to do anything else after, you know, 3 months without a win? I don't think so.
Mm. The goal difference as well is massively in Galway's favour. So if they can just keep level on points going into that last game of the season, they just have to not lose in the RSC.
Yeah, exactly.
Cork Brown Bread, though, we might talk more about them later for the Cup semi-final preview. Sligo Rovers 1, Pats 0. Delighted to be able to sit down and watch this on Saturday, because generally most Saturdays we're either in Bishopsgate doing a game or there's no game on. So it's a nice rare treat when I do get to sit down and watch Sligo Rovers on a Saturday night. I just before I get to Sligo, I know we gave them lots of praise last week about how they've turned season around, dragged themselves out of that relegation zone, and they duly deserve that praise again this week. Just on Pats, I thought this performance, this game, summed up their entire season. Lots of nice, flashy approach play, absolutely zero purpose to it, no end product. I thought they were very, very poor on the night.
And you watched all of it, did you?
I watched it live, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, that's something that we've been very critical, and that's why they're not as high up the table as they should have been, or to the level that we expected of them this season. It's a lot of pissing about.
Yeah.
That's obviously no good to anybody, and I can't understand. I know the team set up, you know, defensively against them, and you know all the crying, and you know, oh, it's hard to break down a brick wall, and blah blah blah. But like, there has to be ways to get the ball into Melia. You know, they've done it a few times this season. It's not, you know, beyond the realms of possibility. And for a team that, you know, is fighting for their lives in a relegation dogfight and all the other lines that you hear, you have to be more proactive and more attack minded. I know there was like some good bits of play and all. Levy's getting a good bit of praise at the moment for his carrying, ball carrying and stuff like that, but there has to be more important at the end of it.
He would be, if ball carrying and dribbling was a sport, he would be the world champion, but he doesn't release the ball in time.
Yes, yeah.
He doesn't score enough goals. He doesn't get enough assists. I'm not saying he's not going to be an excellent player, but he really needs to work on when to release the ball and try and
get and the more and general decision making.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, like, you know, for all the good work that he does, he makes a bollocks of it when it comes down to actually doing something with it. So that's a problem. So yeah, look, it's there will be a bit of drawing board work required in the off season from Stephen Kenny. I'm not, you know, would you be looking for another lock of players, or would you be looking to get rid of a few players? Probably would be. But like, there is the kernel of the of a very, very good side there. They just need to, you know, improve in certain areas, like as you said, like ball carrying and
yeah. Like I had heard people say earlier in the season, I kind of was thinking, is that just very lazy commentary and people just trying to create something? A lot of people were saying there's very similar aspects to this Pats team this season and Stephen Kennedy's Ireland. But my God, I seen that on Saturday.
Did you find that?
Lovely football where it doesn't matter. Lovely passing around the back. Lovely stuff in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
Once it gets to the final third, no, nothing. Like it wasn't the case that they created loads of chances Saturday. Amelia missed them. Now, he missed a sitter, by the way, but that was presented to him. I can't remember, was it McLean that like pretty much fell over the ball and presented it straight to Amelia? Melia resulted in falling over the ball himself when he was one on one against the goalkeeper. We talked about that last week. He's a brilliant young talent, but he does miss some serious chances. But that was their best chance of the game. They created nothing themselves. They were very, very dull to watch.
Yeah, that's a problem. And like if you look, we'll say like Akiki, like the first shot for the goal is kind of like just a snapshot. He plays it well into himself, and he smacks it. and unfortunately just falls back to him. But like, that was a very clinical finish from the rebound.
Yeah.
He drives it into the top roof of the net, can't be got near by an angle who's already on the ground. So, you know, great stuff from him. But that was the difference of the game. And, you know, I don't want to be just, you know, obviously, as I said, it was important for Sligo to get those points and get that win. Like, they're unbeaten in the last five or six. You know, some really good results in the middle of that as well. Galway last week in Amy DC Park, a particularly important one. But it's not over for Pats yet. Do you know what I mean? Like, they need to be still keeping the pressure on. Like, you know, they can get to Bowes in third place. So,
well, they won't play it like this. And
yeah,
I was watching the game live, and I actually, with about 15 minutes to go, I actually stuck a tenner on Sligo minus one to go and get another, because they were destroying Pats on the counter-attack. Pats were pushing more players forward, defending up around the halfway line, and I thought it was only a matter of time before Sligo got a second, and they came close a few times and ball just didn't fall their way. But it was far more likely that Sligo were going to get another goal than Pats were going to get an equaliser. And again, looking at the stats, Pats almost 60% of the ball, made almost 500 passes. Yet it was the team with less of the ball that created the greater chances. And again, Drogheda the other night, everyone talks about puke football, and they only had, I think, 39, 40% possession. They had 20 shots in the game. So it just goes to show there are other ways of playing this game than being obsessed with possession and the ball. And I get a little bit of that from Pats, I have to say.
Yeah. I think it's a... Don't be too harsh on Stephen Kenny. He's a successful manager, but like,
to say the least,
it seems like a limitation. You know, I can only play this way. Possession is everything. Whereas, I think I said it a few weeks ago, I'd much rather watch a Drogheda game live than a Pats game. And I've been to a few Pats games this season. I haven't seen Drogheda live this year. But actually, did I see them in? Might see them in Richmond. I can't remember. But yeah, I don't want to be like, it's not old style of football that Drogheda are playing. It's just more productive. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need the ball, but we're still creating more chances or creating more opportunities. So it's just a preference that I have.
Right, let's look back at the First Division results from the weekend, Gary, and only one place to start, that's Oriel Park, where Dundalk looked like they might make a bags of it for a little while, but eventually they came out on top 3-2 against UCD, but a couple of penalty decisions going against the students here. What were your thoughts on them, particularly the first one?
Well, first one was never a penalty. I don't think there's any question about that. I thought it was a desperate decision.
Even herself said that now, as a diehard Dundalk fan, she thought it was very, very soft.
Well, soft is an understatement, really. Like, it just
that's the best you were going to get with her now. So,
yeah. To be fair, I'll take the hit on that one. Like, UCD went well. I thought Cherry was desperate.
That's a big issue for them going into next season, I suppose.
Does anybody, like, I don't think Peter Cherry believes he's going to be number one keeper for Dundalk next year.
I suppose,
he'll be, you know.
He is goalkeeping coach. How many times has he been resurrected now?
Honest to God, yeah.
Come September next year, we could be talking about Peter Cherry in between the sticks again.
Yeah, he was bad for UCD's opening goal. Dundalk had a really good chance. Aruby puts a good bit of pressure on the UCD keeper, and he does well to dive inside the box to claim it again. But I think the decision for the penalty for Dundalk was just never test for decision. I have no idea
The ball goes the other way. It's clear contact on the ball.
Yeah, but like he doesn't even go, like, he doesn't go through the player or nothing.
No.
Like he makes contact with the player, but it's after the initial contact on the ball, by my estimation, which is obviously correct. The UCD, like, to be fair to Dundalk, like, they did put a heap of pressure on. They did create a lot of problems for the UCD keeper. The second penalty, I thought, was a penalty. you think it was a bit soft, do you think?
Probably was in the soft category again, but it was...
He was pulled back, like he was...
Yeah, the defender almost deserved to give away a penalty for the poor defending, if that makes sense. It was a poor position he got himself in.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Kenny does really well to sneak in and get his head on it to make it 3-1, which kind of makes the whole thing safe. I know UCD scored a few minutes later to...
Dundalk have an awful habit of that. The Kerry game, you know, conceding straight after the restart twice seems to be a habit that they've fallen into. But did well to get over the line, because I suppose when they go 1-0 down and hear that Cove are winning, the whole thing really could have fallen to ribbons quite quickly for Dundalk, particularly after the defeat against Longford last week and all the flack they took. But I mentioned them on the podcast that didn't go out that time. A. Durbin, I thought he was brilliant in the game that week against Bray. And was everything, he kind of drove everything on. And again, without being at the game the other night, but watching back some of it, he's so important to that team.
Oh, he is. There's no question about it.
Darragh Horgan was back again. Oh, there was a report out there that he was out for the rest of the season. But the lad that wrote, I kind of actually joked with a few lads. I said he'll be back next week, and lo and behold, there he was. So. A bit of mind games going on for maybe there from the Dundalk camp. But I think having those two players back on the pitch, very, very important for Dundalk.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. Even I think you said the week of the town match when you mentioned that was suspended and Horgan was injured. And was it O'Keefe?
O'Keefe was out as well, yeah.
Yeah, so like, you know, Longford Town could and did something in that game. But like, it does take away. Would you say it's a worrying sign for Dundalk that, like, you? I know they're two key players, and if you take two key,
exactly. They're two. The three of those players we mentioned are the three most experienced players. Darragh Horgan's a former international. A. Durbin's the vice captain. Conor O'Keefe, a very solid fullback who obviously knows A from playing at Galway. So I think if you take them two or three players out of any team, they're going to struggle. I wouldn't worry about that. But I would worry for them massively next season.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. You know, they need a heap of players in. There's no question about that. And I think I think McDade is he until the end of next year? On a deal?
Probably. I doubt he went to Athlone went to Dundalk for 6 months, but I can't remember. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Kieran Gilduff will be a busy man, and he was a busy man last week talking shite. He was quoted there, you know, we could only have dreamt to be in the position that they're in. You know what? That, you know, I know it's only a small comment, but like, that's bollocks. That is pure bollocks. You know, probably the top two budgets in the league.
Yeah, are you reading into that a bit too much? I mean, this time last year, me and you made the prediction they wouldn't get a license for this season. We didn't think there'd be a Dundalk FC in the league this season, and they're in it now, and they're going to win the first division. So, in terms of where they've come from to now, it is some story, it's some rise, but I also get what you're saying, that they have all the resources there to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is probably the least surprising effort or like result from a team of players before a ball was kicked this season. You know, come on, like, garbage. Anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
Just flipping to the UCD very quickly. I'm making this comment most weeks on the pod now, but again, I think a very good performance from UCD, and I think they'll do well in the playoffs. Kerry won, Treaty won. A very late Treaty. Both goals coming late. Sean McGrath's goal was a great strike, but he's a player we've been an admirer of on this show for a long time. Treaty United with a late equaliser, and could be very important in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, well, it keeps... them ahead, obviously, of Wexford. Treaty are playing Longford on Friday, and Wexford are home to UCD. That'll be a very tricky game for Wexford. They're on a 3-game winning streak, but it's teams that are below them. Now, I know they had that great win against Cove. But and I suppose, to be fair, I am being harsh. Like, they had to go up to Harps to beat them. And beat them convincingly.
the three headers from Larkin. And then they had to follow that up on Monday night with a win against... that was the Monday night game, and then followed up on Friday with the win in Athlone. I'm probably being harsh. Yeah, no, I know, but still, they still have to do it. Maybe I am being harsh, but it was a very important point for Treaty, as you mentioned. It was needed. And it was... keeps them in the playoffs by a point. So a big game for them on Friday.
Yeah. Cove Ramblers 4, Finn Harps 1. This is more kind of what we expected from Cove than the defeat in Wexford. But at home, you know, Harps making that long trip down there, that they've kind of dropped off like a stone in the last few weeks. There's probably no great surprise about this result. But we were talking earlier about Player of the Year contenders. I don't think there'll be any sort, and how competitive it's going to be in the Premier Division. I don't think it's going to be a contest at all in the First Division. Barry Coffey should have that wrapped up.
Yeah, another was a hat-trick here from him, about all of a half an hour or so.
Insanity, he is not playing for Cork City this season in the Premier Division. You'd have to look at decisions like that and say, what happened there?
You do.
And we will talk more about Cork City, as I said, when we get to the Cup semi-final. There's a good bit to discuss there off the pitch, but... yeah, a player of his quality should be playing Premier Division football. Maybe he'll get Cove into the Premier League next season. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. But like, it was a surprising some of the players that they let go at the end of the season, Cork. But as you said, we'll chat about them later on. I think you're right as regards the Player of the Year in the First Division. The contributions he has made, some fantastic goals. Look, he barely had to show up to score any of his goals there on Friday against Harps.
Harps have become they've become the Waterford equivalent of the First Division. The three headers last week, the goals they conceded here, just to shocking, non-existent defending.
Yeah, it's like they didn't know who this lad was. It's like, who's this fella scoring all the goals? Oh yeah, he's the top scorer in the division, I think. Well, he is a good by a good journey. It's like, what are you talking about? Like it's just desperate stuff, and really disappointing because, you know, Harps were on a little run there. It was kind of, will we make a little run for the playoffs? But then to let the goals go in, concede the goals that they conceded the other night, where it was just dire. And like, even like the header, the ball breaks down, cross comes, I think, from the right. Keeper flaps at it, and then there's a diving header that rolls into the bottom corner for Coffey to make his hat trick. Like, no one reacts. No one's like expecting the keeper to make a hands of it, but yeah, just poor, just really poor from Harps, and kind of ends their season, really.
Yeah, Bray Wanderers 0, Longford Town 2. I was at this, so I'll take the run on this. Gaz. Let's start before the game. My match day experience.
Oh, we're going this far. All right. Take the floor, please.
Got parked outside the ground, happy enough. Down to the Hibernia Hotel, I think it is, where I always go just because it's handy. Nearly fell over sideways when I paid $7.50 for a pint. I thought,
seen you coming.
I know we're close to Dublin, lads, but come on now, it's Bray. So just had the one there, and then rambled up to the ground and decided I needed something to eat. So I got goujons and chips out of the chip van in Bray. And as people will have seen on the Between the Stripes Twitter, I was very, very impressed.
Oh.
Yeah. Best goujons and chips I think I've ever had in a League of Ireland ground. Now, there might have only been three or four goujons in the box, but they were big. There was one huge one the size of your arm. Beautiful. Absolutely unbelievable. Homemade chips. And
high cuisine in Carlisle, according to this.
A lovely dip that came with it. It was like garlic dip, but like definitely homemade, not out of a pack. It was unbelievable. Now, I had to ask for salt, and this was a bit unusual. He didn't have any packets of salt. He just gave me, I seen him going to get, you know, the little plastic tubs that you put like sauce into.
Right.
I seen him going to grab one of them, and I was like, no, salt, not sauce, salt. And he was like, yes, my friend, yes. And he just put a load of salt into one of those little plastic things. That was a bit unusual. So it covered my chips in that. But I have to say, Top class, 5-star for the goujons and chips. Maybe not 5-star for the price. 14 quid for the meal deal. Got a bottle of water with it, chips and the goujons.
But I suppose you always pay a premium inside a stadium. But if it's that good.
seems to be the going rate in Bray for everything. So, yeah, if you're willing to part with a few pounds, I'd definitely check out that chip van in the Carlisle.
Yeah, lovely stuff. And you left it on a lovely clean bin as well to take your photo. I forgot to say that.
Clean off the bin. I make no apologies. I was starving.
And what about the football?
On the football, yeah. Not much happening first 20 or 25 minutes. Bray probably on top. Longford not really at the races. But once Longford got their goal, started to grow and confidence, started to spray the ball around. I thought the three lads, the Holy Trinity, I'm now christening these three lads in the middle of the park. Aaron Doran, sensational once again, as were Alex O'Brien and Sean Moore. They've made a huge impact since coming in. Yeah, Longford worked really hard. Bray, a bit like Pat's, some lovely approach play without creating anything. The best chance they had in the game, really, in the first half, I think it was still 0-0 at the time. It was the one time where the Longford back four weren't on the same wavelength. And I think Jamie Egan kind of attacks trying to win a ball and a couple of the lads go up with him and a couple drop back. And that resulted in a lad being played onside and he was running on goal and about to get a shot away. And Swazier, who makes an unbelievable last-ditch sliding tackle in the box. But aside from that, lots of heroic blocks and tackling from Longford, but never really felt threatened that Bray were going to score in truth. And Longford got their second goal and they were full value for the win. I know the Bray manager or head coach, whatever moniker they've given them, said after the game it was probably their worst performance of the season.
Nice. Well, look, I suppose like it's nice to talk positively. Like Longford Town, another second away win of the season, which they've been obviously struggling with for a while.
Yeah.
I think it's obviously lovely to get a clean sheet away from home as well. I want to one thing I did notice. Like, look, obviously I couldn't watch the game. I was at a wedding, but I it was a. You know the type of wedding, like it was only like 60 to 70 people at it. So I couldn't
can't be the bollocks of the phone. Yeah.
Yeah, well I can't really even snake away. I'll go for a 10-minute shite and watch 10 minutes of the game or not, that messing. But I did watch the highlights as soon as they were put up. It looked to me like there was lots of good hard work from Longford Town that actually was not stupid hard work. Like it was the right type of hard work, like lads doing their jobs very efficiently and comfortably. So that was very positive for Longford Town. I know we were chatting to Ethan after. Can Longford Town sneak into the playoffs?
I think they're probably just going to run out of road. I think they're probably a point or two too far back, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think if Treaty were 5 points ahead, I think it might be possible. But the point that they got just like evens it out at, because the goal difference is insane between the two teams.
The goal difference is the killer, yeah.
Yeah, and that's obviously discounting Wexford, you know what I mean, whatever they might do. So it is a bit, because like, next thing you know, Longford Town on 39 points and...
It's mad to say, given I suppose where Longford have been kind of second bottom all season, really. But they could possibly win their next three. I fancy them on Friday down in Limerick. Who knows what happens Friday night? Cove title race could be over on the beach, waiting for the playoffs to get underway. They come to Longford where they've dropped points this season, and then Longford away to Athlone on the last day of the season. It would be the most Longford thing ever to win those two games and then not beat the worst Athlone team in history on the last day of the season. That would be Longford Town through and through. But
a great win and a good performance. Shows that there's a bottle in the team, which is nice.
Final word on the match day experience. They really need to tone down the RoboCop stuff in Bray.
That's still a problem, is it?
It's just so intimidating when you walk in. You're walking in and lads are tooled up like you're about to go into a war zone.
Aye.
Where it's family and kids walking in and like they're looking at these big men in body armor essentially, and it's just it's not a nice welcome, I have to say. That's not on the volunteers or whatever that are around the place. I'm sure I didn't really engage with anybody, but I'm sure there's loads of great people around the place, but just it's not a great aesthetic when you walk into the ground.
Yeah, because when you walk in, it's not very well lit. just inside the gate. So like, it's dark. It's darker than what was probably out in the street before you walked in. And then you see a bunch of, as you said, RoboCops.
And you're getting eyeballed. Around. Like, they're eyeballing you. It's just, it is intimidating.
It is. Yeah. Like, I'd say I often...
And I fully agree. We all know the issues they had a couple of years ago and kind of had to get these lads in to sort it out. And they've done a great job. There has been no issues in the Carlisle ground.
Is it not sorted out now? Is it not finished?
Yeah. I suppose they can't be complacent and just, you know, go back to having no security, but kind of tone it down a bit. You know what I mean? It's very, even there was a huge amount of Spanish students at the game the other night.
Oh,
and it was great. They were mixing with the Longford, because the Longford Town fans, they brought a busload up and they had the drum and they were singing, and the Spanish students were really attracted to this, and they were over chatting with the Longford fans and getting pictures together. It was great. Like, there was one stage where in front of me, there was a load of Spanish students standing, and one of the securities came over and was like shouting at them to sit down into their seats. And I was like,
what?
He was like, you can't stand here. And I was like, you know, these are visiting our country. You know, not let them run wild and do what they want, but we want to send them home with a happy memory and experience. Now, I think they did get that. As I said, at the end, loads of the Longford and Spanish students getting pictures together and everything. But I just thought, you know, come on. Needs to be a bit warmer when you walk in the place.
Yeah, no, it's that's stupid. Like,
yeah.
But also, I just want to say, like, these are brought in by Bray Wanderers. They're not like a volunteer force that have like entered the Carlisle grounds to police it on behalf of Bray. They do what they're told. Mm. So, but this has been a complaint that a lot of clubs have had, or fans have had, for a good lack of years. There's a better way to do it.
There is, because they've done really well with the ground. The outside bar area, again, I actually haven't, in the few games I've been since that's launched, I haven't been in there, but everyone has good reports about that. The food offer now, as I said, has really improved. Okay, I'm not mad about the plastic pitch, but hey, what can you do? It's a lovely place to go and watch football. You're by the seaside. You know, the fans are welcome and friendly. Nice chatting to people around the town.
Yeah, 100%.
Sort out that last little bit. It's just all that's letting it down at the minute for me.
Yeah, but like, because like you could, you know, if the bar wasn't there, you're not going to be crying about it. But like, it's the people you interact with, and I've always had a great time down in the Carlisle. I live close to the Dart, so like, if I am doing nothing, like, I think the last time I was there was the Shells Cup match.
Oh yes,
if you remember,
Duffer had a bit of a meltdown. Yeah,
he did. Yeah, but like, I had a couple of pints in that bar area. I think that game was on a Sunday at 3 o'clock, so that's why I went down to it. You know, lovely day, pints out. Now, there was still a bit of, like, I was just a bloke at game. I wasn't with any particular set of fans, so maybe I didn't see it that much, but like, there was a lot of lads standing around, you know, tooled up, as you said.
Yeah.
Absolutely no need for it. And like, even what a very good starting point would be, right, we keep the security team or whoever they are, whatever crowd they're with. Right, maybe don't go as if you're heading off to war.
Yeah.
You know, tone down the tooling, as you said, would be a good start.
And finally then, in the first division, Athlone 1, Wexford 2. Athlone made Wexford work extremely hard for these 3 points.
They really did. did I text you at one point to say that? Because was it that game that I was hemming and hawing about? At Lone maybe doing something?
No, it was the pitch recently, yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I was just kind of saying that surely at Lone get some glimpse of positivity. really good goal. I thought Teddy did really well. He broke through three or four lads and a lovely true ball in, and can't remember who scored, but goes on.
Surely somebody gets a hold of Teddy next season.
Yeah. I suppose at the start of the season, like, there was a lot of players coming in and it was a good coup for them to keep him. A lot of those players are not there anymore. So he's probably one of the better ones to have kept, and probably will be picked up by someone, maybe like Dundalk or Cork, if he is to stay in the first division. But yeah, really good bit of play there. But I think there was always the feeling there, particularly with the good work that Wexford have done in the last few weeks, that there was a bit of an inevitability that Athlone would concede and make a balls of it. And they sure enough did. Obviously, it's been a terrible season, but like, you know, some of the stuff that they do be at, it's just nothing's coming off of them ever. You know, balls dropping in the wrong place all the time. So it's disappointing, but not a surprise either. But look, Wexford did what they needed to do, got the 3 points, like and a lovely goal to win it, nice curler into the top corner. But a lot more standing around from the Athlone defenders, to meet you, arms in the air, Mark Connolly stuff. So yeah, another loss on their record, and you know, as you mentioned a few moments ago, the worst season in their history. Well, that we can think of.
Yeah. Heading into the Between the Stripes LOI Podcast Predictions League, then we were joined last week by Lionsy, a Bows fan. And tell you what, Gary, there was a really good standard of predictions last week. Lionsy put 9 points up for the listeners. You put 10 points up for yourself, and I put 13 points up last week. I
think
one of my best performances of the season. So that leaves the league like this. I am bottom on 173. You're second on 177, and the listeners are on 196.
Yeah, so it's getting you're putting a face on it now, to be fair to you. You were a good boy backs, but you've been chewing me up there.
So, yeah, Jim Fitzgerald, Waterford fan, joining us this week, Gaz. Been an interesting week for the Blues. Let's see if he can put a smile on some Waterford fans' faces with a good performance here in the Predictions League. We'll start with the First Division and Waterford's big local rivals, Wexford. They host UCD. Jim going for a 1-1 draw here. This is a huge game in Wexford season, of course.
I think it's a huge game in Wexford season. I think the little run that they're on will be ended. I think UCD have nothing really to play for. I don't think they're going to catch Bray. They're 7 points behind. That is possible, but I don't think it's going to happen. But I think they're going to just keep ticking away. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to UCD.
I was nearly tempted to go that way myself. I'll follow Jim with a 1-1 draw. Athlone against Dundalk. This could be the night for the Lilywhites.
Cricket score here, is it?
I really think so.
What are you going for? Well, it's your team.
Jim's going 4-1 to Dundalk. I think that's a really good prediction. They probably will concede one, will they?
I'm not convinced that they will. Go on, what are you going to say there?
I'll go 5-1, Dundalk.
I was going to say 5. I'll tell you what, I'll go 5-0.
5-0, okay. I don't think they'll make the same mistake they did against Longford. They'll go down there with Dervin and Horgan, and I think they'll just put Athlone to the sword. Cove against Bray. Cove have to win. Bray don't have to win. So does that simply make this a home win?
I think Cove are going fairly well. Obviously, they had that blip there a few weeks ago against Wexford, but they still scored twice. Probably shouldn't have conceded. And maybe that goal was offside. But anyway.
Will we see a response from Bray? Because the manager was fairly critical after that Longford performance, and there's a feeling that the players are kind of on the beach waiting for the playoffs, and I think they want to try and maybe shake that mentality out of the team if that has sunk in. So,
I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Cove. Are you going to go 3-1?
I'm going to go 3-0.
To Cove?
Yeah.
Will Coffey get another hat-trick?
Could be a good show. Jim going 2-0 to Cove. Treaty United against Longford Town. I'm going to go first because this is something I very rarely do, but I'm going to go for a Longford Town win 1-0.
Yeah, same with me. No surprises there. Seen a lot of positives in Longford Town recently.
They've done the job on Treaty at home earlier on this season, and I think that was one of their worst defeats that they had this season in the Markets Field back in the summer. Although Eric Arrow scored a really good goal that day. I think different team, Longford team going down to this one.
Yeah. So you're going 1-0 as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Jim going 3-2 to Treaty. That's
I'll go away, Albert. Go away.
Waterford against Drogheda in the Premier Division. Jim going for a 2-1 win to Drogheda. So he's going against his own team here.
I don't sure can you blame him, really. Like, you know, what?
New manager bounce? Newish manager bounce? Did they get half the bounce since he was there before?
Well, like, is he, like, they obviously got a response out. He obviously got a response out of him before.
Mm.
So, you know, obviously, probably loads of players coming and gone since. I'm going to go 1-1.
I'm going to go the same. I'd just be worried about Drogheda not being clinical.
Yeah. You said it a few times, and I think in some cases it might have been kind in recent weeks. Waterford aren't playing desperately bad.
Mm.
Like, you know, you look at them and like, how are these fellas not, like, how are they not put out of the division? You know, 2 months ago they've been that bad. Like, it's not desperate. Like, obviously there's lots of desperate incidents in the game, but like there's been times where they've been unlucky.
Well, the game in Daily Mount, the keeping mistake cost them. The game at Tolka, how they didn't equalise in the last couple of minutes, a couple of goal line clearances from Shells, the penalty to give away. It's just those defensive mistakes. Set pieces will be a concern here against Drogheda, but Drogheda missing, I suppose, an out-and-out goal scorer, although the young lad Kareem's doing well the last few weeks, but they're missing that Douglas James Taylor type player. Might come back to bite them in the long grass. We'll go 1-1 here, I think. Jim going 2-1 to Drogheda, as I said. Derry City against Sligo Rovers, a fixture Derry have made a bags of plenty of times in the past.
Oh, mother of God. Now, this isn't the Brandywell now. This is going to be a different kettle of fish. They had some good news there. They signed Michael Duffy up to another contract.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, probably the most surprising contract announcement, really, but signed on for another while anyway.
I suppose at 31, where else is he going to go?
This is it. Let me see now for a minute. I have a feeling Derry will do it. I'll go for a 2-1 win to Derry. Elding to score for Sligo.
Okay. I don't know if that really deserves a bonus point if it happens, but we'll see.
No, it doesn't. No.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to go 1-1. I think Sligo on the counter-attack could be dangerous here. Jim going 2-2. Into the cup semi-final. And before we preview this one, I did say that we want to talk Cork City. Now, this isn't something I was aware of until I seen an interview with Off the Ball and Shawnee Maguire after the game on Friday night where Cork were beaten by Galway.
Yeah.
There's apparently talk of a fans protest at this semi-final on Saturday. Now, as we know, there's been a lot of unrest, discontent with the ownership down there for pretty much all of this season. But is that very strange timing for a cup semi-final if they are to launch something like that, the Cork fans? And this is something our listeners from Cork can, you know, give us information on, tweet us, why are you doing this, what's the story? You know, I would just find the timing quite strange.
Well, in one hand, like, I suppose, like, if you think it's wrong, like, there's no bad time to protest. But would you like a cup final?
Mm.
It's kind of hard to know because, like, you know, you look at some of the stuff like, oh, players don't give a shite. They're, you know, here for the paycheck and gone again and all the rest of it. That's just yarn on Twitter that you do be seeing after games and stuff like that. Would you say, like, I don't think it's a great time to be doing it. Like, at the end of the day, you could get into a cup final in the Aviva, which would be nice. No question about it.
is it a case also? Is there a case to be made that like fans think that this game is going to be a hockey-in of some description?
It does seem to be that kind of feeling, which I don't necessarily agree with. From watching Pats recently, now they could turn it on for this game and win 3 or 4 nil, but there does seem to be that kind of that fear within Cork that this is going to be a hockey-in.
Yeah. So does it really matter when the protest is done? Like this game isn't like a sacred cow. If there's a thought of defeat in the fan base.
I only heard about this through that interview, so I don't know. Is the plan maybe if they go 3 or 4 down, right, boys, get the banners out, then that's fair enough. But
I suppose, like, sure, it will be on telly and stuff like that.
I'd imagine that's playing a big part. If there is if there is talk of a protest, that's probably playing a big part in it. But look, we've spoken before about the owner there. Yes, he's got an awful lot wrong, but you know, there's been several boys before him that have got a lot wrong and a lot right, and nobody seems to be able to crack the code down there. But look, that's probably for another day. Cork City against St. Pat's, cup semi final. What way are you going here?
2-0 to Pats.
2-0 to Pats. Nothing fancy.
Nothing fancy. No,
Jim,
I think
Jim is obviously one of them people that thinks it is going to be a hockey, and he's going 5-0 to St. Pat's.
Don't see it in Pats. Like, it could be, you know, maybe a stuck-on goal in the last few minutes to make it 3-0 or something like that. But I think, no, I just, as you said, nothing fancy. Just get to the cup final. Another great day out.
Yeah, I'll go 2-1 to Pats. Shamrock Rovers against Kerry. Now we'll be previewing we're going to include the European games in the Predictions League this week. So
where are we?
Yeah, we're going all in this week. But we'll start with the cup games. Rovers will obviously be coming back from Prague. We did have just to jump ahead, I suppose, to the hotline. There is a question in there about the fact that Rovers are coming back from Prague. Does it give Kerry some sort of a chance? I suppose we saw with the Longford game in one of the earlier rounds that when they rotate, it does level out the playing field a little bit, but Kerry would have to have the day of their lives, and Shamrock Rovers would probably have to have one of the worst days of their lives here if the upset is to happen. So
well, one thing that we saw in that Longford Town game, they brought on the ringers.
Yes.
With 20 minutes left. You know what I mean? They brought on Burke, Mandreou, Grant, Watts.
Green.
Oh, was he thrown on as well, was he?
Yeah, I think so.
So, like, you know, if it is going to, you know, feelings of extra time or, you know, some shit's going to happen, they do have those options that, you know, even if they do put out, like, I'd say a slightly weakened team, no matter what way it slices, though. And this is something that I mentioned last week and probably the Phantom Pod and the rest of it. This is a huge, huge, monumental opportunity for Rovers to get to a cup final.
Yeah.
That they haven't done in a good while. And one of the things that we've been critical about Bradley is that they've been obviously so successful and winning all the leagues and getting into European group stages and all the rest of it. They haven't done the cup any real justice. Huge opportunity to do that here. I'm going to have to say that I don't see any chance for Kerry.
No.
I think it's going to be 3-0 in regular time.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to go 4-0. Jim's going 9-0 to Shamrock Rovers. Just to bring it back to that Longford game, because that's the game a lot of Kerry fans will look at and take hope from. This is going to sound extremely arrogant, and the numbers don't really back up what I'm about to say. Longford might be ahead of Kerry in the table, but they've actually conceded more goals than Kerry this season.
Yep.
I don't believe Kerry have it within them from what we've seen of them this season. And I know they've been on a decent run of form of late in the league, and the amazing result against Sligo. That was a game where there were 7 goals, 4-3 after extra time. I don't think Kerry have it in them yet. I don't think they're developed and mature enough yet to go to Talla and be as defensively and disciplined, organised as Longford were in that game. I don't think they're there yet. Mm. I don't think they have the experience yet. I know Longford is a fairly inexperienced team, but there's probably players there that have experience of playing against Rovers and playing in Talla before. Kerry don't really have that. I think the bigger pitch, I think they'll be absolutely annihilated on that bigger pitch. I think they'll be blowing after 70 minutes.
Yeah, well, like, there was, like, Longford Town had to work really hard. You know, they were diligent, they were concentrated. You know, there's some really strong performances in there. I do see what you're saying. I kind of be inclined.
We spoke so often about the naivety of some of the defending, the greenness of them at the back. I just think that will kill them here against this level of opposition.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, I said, what did I say? 3-0 there. Like, I could just see Gaffney coming on and just, like, bursting through a heap of lads and just smashing it in.
They've never come up against a Gaffney Gaffney, a complete sow of a lad. They've never seen like him in the first division.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think that's going to be a huge problem for them.
There's a huge Kerry crowd going up from what I believe. I think fair play to the club now all season. They've been running free supporters buses, which is amazing, because I can only imagine the cost of that. But there's three or four buses from all over the county going up. There's going to be a huge Kerry crowd. I'm sure a lot of Kerry people living in Dublin will go to this. I hope they get a moment, just a goal or something that they have on the day.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's a very good point. Like, Longford Town had a few moments. Like, obviously, they were level for a large part of the game. But even, like, before a goal was scored, Aaron Doran had a massive chance to go 1-0 up. So, like, I think you're right, and that's actually a very good point. It is something to say, yeah, it would be class just to have a moment, go 1-0 up, a penalty or a screamer from 30 yards, just to have that, something to hold on to and give a bit of interest in the game.
Yeah. Then on to Europe. Shells against Hacken in Talla on Thursday night. If they're to have any chance of progressing through the league phase, they probably need to get off to a winning start here.
They certainly do.
Have you seen enough from Shells in recent league games to suggest that they can?
Yeah, I think and someone mentioned them there in the list of players of the season, Harry Wood. I think he's going to have to show up here big time. I'd look to be quite honest with you, I don't know very much about Hacken. I know when Cork bet them, I think the headline in the back pages was Hacken sent packing, which I always found very funny. I think as you said, and it's a very fair point, they need to start lively, and I don't think they can't be losing this game to start with.
Hacken are only 10th in their league, I see here at the minute. 10th of 16 teams. 8 wins from 25 games.
I think you mentioned
him though, Harry Wood. I think the pitch in Talla will suit him down to the ground. A bit of extra space. We saw that the game in Windsor. Ali Coote seems to be playing quite well at the minute as well. I'd be hopeful they can get at least a point out of the game.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to go, you know what, their first at proper European football, I'm going to go for a lovely win, 1-0 to Shelburne.
That'll be lovely. I'm going to go 1-1, and Jim is going the same as well. And then Sparta Prague against Rovers. Rovers got spanked when they went out there last year. This is a tough start for them in the Conference League.
Most certainly is. It'll be hard to see much here now, to be honest. I think, you know, big stadium,
top of the Czech league, 8 wins from 10,
comfortable. Only lost the one game is right. I'm gonna say 2-0 to Sparta.
Yeah, I'll go for the same kind of result as last year, 3-0, and Jim is going the same there. Right, that's the predictions league. Before we go, just in case, on the off chance, we don't get something out next week, but we'll try our best before I head away. We'll talk about Ireland. I know the squad isn't announced until Thursday, until after this pod comes out, but what are you hoping for? Aside from more misery, less misery.
I only got the book me flights there this evening. I've been Something actually that I haven't done in really since the Armenia game. I think anybody that knows me and anybody that listened to the emergency pod, I was deeply impacted by that result in Armenia. And I've been kind of, I actually have been listening, no, I'm not going to, don't worry, I won't make a hames of this, but I've been listening to a lot of the talk about your man that manages the United, Ruben Amorim.
Yeah.
And he has a system and everybody has to conform to that system and all of this shit. And some of the people that I'm listening to are seeing on online, I'd say like Roy Keane, he talks a lot more, and Martin O'Neill actually, I think in the last few days, was talking more about, like, he was giving out about XG stats, yeah, and stuff like that. He mentioned one thing in that little speech was about like an eye for a player.
Yes.
And when you look at a player, like, I don't think there's a human being except a subsection of, you know, statisticians and analytics. And even, you know, Charles Barkley can speak to me about analytics. But the whole thing about being able to identify a player, like we don't look at players, like, I don't think about, you know, I was a big fan of Ruud van Nistelrooy. Not because, you know, I don't know how many goals he scored. I think he got over 100 for United or whatever he did. But like the swagger, the skill, the finishes that he did, you know, that no stat did that. Like I mentioned it in the emergency pod, like John O'Shea going up there up in Gilshankirchen, which is 11 years ago now, to score that goal, to a pisser of a goal by Manuel Neuer after taking, you know, hammerings off the world champions in their own backyard the whole game, and then we steal a point at the last minute. Like, it's I think there's nearly gone into a situation where the game has been like codified into just, you know, how many sprints a bloke does or all of that stuff. Now I know I'm coming around to it, but like Ireland has always like tried or seemed to have upped their game against like the giants in international football.
Bit like long time.
Yeah. But like, you know, they were very close to winning out in Portugal until Ronaldo showed up. Almost nicked a point off France at home. Think of Collins' header. I do think though that the system or the systems and where a player has to be in a certain phase of play, that has to go. To prevent a hockey in here, which Portugal are very capable of doing, as we know, there has to be more than just systemifying them out of the game. And that comes down to, every time I say it, in this current phase of football that we're in, it's just like, the system, speaking against any system, is, you know, totally verboten. It's coming down to guts and dying and getting to the ball and making the block and, you know, digging your player out. You know, you said in the emergency pod that we're so quiet. Do you know what I mean? There's no lad digging a lad out for doing something stupid. And that type of stuff, I'm not seeing enough in the Ireland team. And if we're devoid of that against an embarrassment of a result in Armenia, well, then we're going to get absolutely annihilated in Portugal. I genuinely don't believe that's going to happen. But I think I'm going to this game. I've been to a lot of aways in my life. I'm probably going to this game with the least amount of hope I've ever had going to an away game.
Same as that.
And that's sad.
Yeah. In terms of squad selection, the likes of Josh Honohan, I know he's got a really busy schedule at the moment, so I'm not sure if that'll be taken.
I don't know. Could we give him a break from going to the, you know, playing against Kerry in a cup semi final?
Yeah.
Might give him a pass there.
He needs to be in there, doesn't he?
whether starting or whatever, like, this is
why shouldn't he be starting the home game against Armenia?
I can't see any reason why not.
Or are we just going to persist in playing Matt Doherty, who doesn't want to be there?
Yeah, I think that's what will happen. I really don't know. Like, I think I said to Ethan the other night, like Heimer, like, he needs to have like 10 or 12 hernias due to stress from this window. I think the selection of players, like, I know there was this big boost there today that Troy Parrott might be fit to play in the Dutch league this weekend or get into the squad. Like, that, like, we can't be saying that Troy Parrott, who hasn't played in weeks, this is a boost. Is that where we're at, like, really at the minute? Josh Honahan, as just keeping on squad selection, I think you have to put Parrott in there, by the way. So yes, it is a boost, but it's still bad news that we're saying it is a boost. Honan has to get in there. I think allow him to play. Particularly if we get the shit kicked out of us on the Saturday, well, it's over. The whole thing is finished. You might as well like start picking lads from junior league, junior football at that point. I think obviously everything hinges on the state of the Portuguese game. One thing I do want to say, you know, my bar for like the Ireland get filled in by New Zealand 70 points to nothing and it was immoral, you know, the players left everything out there and all of that shit. My bar for that here is going to be astronomically high. You know what I mean? Like, 2-0 or 3-0, Ronaldo and this and that and the other. Half the people that would be saying how great Ronaldo is if he gets two goals on the Saturday, like, they're saying that fella's finished. They're the same people that are saying that lad is finished and shouldn't be in the squad anymore and he's taking up positions and he's running the team and whatever other yarn that they come out with. But that fella's still doing it at whatever bloody age he is now, 41 or whatever it is. I know I'm kind of all over the map here, but I'm just kind of, you know, I've always looked forward to going to away games. Like, even like the heaviest defeat I saw away from in an away was, I think, Switzerland 3-0 in November 2019, just before the pandemic. And, you know, that was not great, to say the least. But I wasn't going into that game going, geez, we're going to get the shit kicked out of us. I was never saying that. And I was never apprehensive about going. And I'm not apprehensive about going now, but, like, the nerves are going to be in really early on. And I'm just not mad about the whole idea. You're going for a few days. What you know, park the holiday talk. What do you think?
I'd agree with absolutely everything you said there. It's sad we're going into games with no hope now. I'm looking forward to obviously the trip to Lisbon and making a bit of a holiday out of it. The game is kind of just it's nearly in the way. But yeah, the thing I'm actually dreading the most is that home game against Armenia. You're going to be in a stadium with about 20,000 at most in it. No atmosphere. Probably after getting thumped out beyond, dragging ourselves up to Dublin of a Tuesday. It's just a sad situation that we're in right now. But look,
and just on that, just in case we don't get to do the pod, it'll really hark back to, like, you know, remember when it was all going to shit with Martin O'Neill?
Yeah.
And there seemed to be no hope back then in some of the games.
Yeah, like, we did that pumped out in Cardiff that time in the Nations League.
Yeah. Like, actually, my friend went to that game and he was at the pub we were in for the year before for the playoff.
Right.
And it seemed just like a regular middle of the day. There was no one there from an Irish perspective.
Yeah.
Like, it was like just lads standing around. It was like a, you know, any old Tuesday of any pub in anywhere. It was just very, oh yeah, we're here and we'll probably get stuffed and it'll be bad. But look, here we are. I hope not.
I think the pricing of the tickets, you wanted to mention that, I think, on the Phantom Pod, wasn't it?
For the Armenia game.
55 brick, isn't it?
Yeah, the Portuguese FA is charging us 20, is it? 20 quid? 25?
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So why are we charging 55 euro to go and watch Armenia? Now, I have a season ticket, it doesn't affect me, but I like going to a match with some sort of an atmosphere, with some sort of a crowd. It's not going to be enjoyable for me as a season ticket holder sitting in the top tier with about 10 people around me.
Yeah, freezing.
Yeah.
And a shit atmosphere looking down at shit football. Like,
An association that's potless. What good is a half empty stadium? Sell it out. I don't care. I know there's an argument sometimes that you can't have tickets going cheap. It devalues the season ticket. I don't care. Sell the tickets for a 5 or a 10 or 15 quid. Sell the place out.
Yeah, because even just actually on that, you know, how does that look for sponsors and,
horrendous.
You know, the story that you're telling.
Yeah.
You're not telling any story worth a hat of shit.
They just can't seem to do anything right at the minute commercially. We saw the Hames up in the Oireachtas the other day. The whole thing just is in an awful mess at the minute. But look, anyway, before we go, because it's getting very late here as we're recording, we better do the BTS hotline before we wrap up for tonight. Get our Waterford the most batshit crazy team that has ever existed. Probably not in this league.
Oh, God, no, not even close. They'd be up there. And different versions of them. But, like, you know, you look at Cork. They'd be up there too.
They've definitely had their fair share, though, Waterford.
Definitely in the last 5 years.
Jeez, go back even the playoff defeat to Dundalk. Didn't they lodge an appeal to that at the time? Getting into Europe and not being allowed in. The Mark Bertram story is just, as we said, League of Ireland heritage. Yeah, they've had their fair share. Ken S, any good statisticians or managers getting the boot after a loss to Shells over the last 3 or 4 years? You'll have to give us more info on that, Ken. I can't remember who's lost jobs after losing the Shell run. We House Enjoyer, how many points will Dundalk win the Premier Division by in 2026? I'll ask you a more serious question, Gary. How many points will they get in the Premier Division? I don't think they'll get 25 points next season with their current squad. Can't predict who they're going to sign, obviously.
I'll tell you one thing. It'd have to be, you know, generationally good off season.
Or, yeah, even at that, the only way they'll stay up by not playing.
Someone's worse.
They need a club to implode, which is possible, very possible in this league. Sean Kelleher, does Rovers being in Prague Thursday genuinely give us Kerry FC any hope for Sunday? We've spoken about that already.
Sorry, no.
Owen Bray concede way too many cheap goals, especially two on Friday, another example. No playoffs are secured and it's been a fantastic season, but got to be better at the back to have any hope against UCD. If the second goal they concede, if Longford conceded that, it would have been absolutely foaming at the mouth. Lawrence Shuckles Academy, it'll be interesting to see what happens Waterford now with the departures and new arrivals. They seem to have been in free fall. On another note, the young talent in this league, Kikiki, McElroy, Reynolds, Melia, Noonan, such hope. And the Nacho man, Andy Cabbage. Galway and Waterford seem to be in a race to the bottom while Sligo are happily moving in the right direction. How big do you think that Waterford-Galway game on the last day of the season will be, or will it be decided before then? I think
there'll be one team will have an advantage, so only requiring a draw by that stage.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely, you know, in the future, before the end of the season, we should probably think a bit more about Sligo and, you know, how they're rectifying stuff as the seasons go on.
Yeah.
But what they're starting to remind me of is, you may remember under Ollie Horgan's tenure.
I knew you were going to say this, yeah.
Yeah, God rest him. Are we starting to see that this type of ebb and flow of a season, you know, it's great that they're pulling out of the fire and things are getting more.
Grabbing out of the hat, yeah.
Yeah. That trick can only be played for so long. And I know they're under pressure and they're competing and they're no money and everybody else has more money and it's hard to attract players out to Sligo and the rest of it. But I don't know the answer, but yeah. It's not easy. And I wouldn't like to see, you know, John Russell in a situation where he's like, well, I'm rabbitless now. And I can't rectify it because I didn't get a couple of key players that would have made a difference. You know, some lad didn't get taken off me a week into the season. Shit like that. I know it's going to be difficult, but I think that's something that we could probably
think about in a future pod. Look, they're going to lose Elding sooner rather than later. I think that's a really, really good subject that we can have on another pod. But look, it's getting late and we're both up early, so hopefully we'll speak to you next week. We'll try and arrange something before we both jet out to Lisbon. But for this week, that was Series 9, Episode 32 of Between the Stripes LOI Podcast. We were brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound lighting and AV solutions. Gary, I'll see you in Lisbon for a Super Bock or two.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you one thing, I had a few pints of it there. It is absolutely lovely.
Oh, the best foreign beer by a mile.
Yeah, Jesus. Like, and that sangria stuff, that is piss. I don't know. You know the way,
it's not as good. I don't know what I call it, piss, but.
Oh, no, yeah. Piss. It's it's garbage. I don't know why. You know the way, two local beers competing with each other. You know, they're big sponsors of the big teams in Portugal and stuff like that. And they're everywhere, sponsoring bars and, you know, all of that. It's just like, how could Super Bock be so nice and sangria be so shit?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had a good few pints of it there over the weekend, and I was very impressed. But yeah, actually, I wasn't in Lisbon. Well, I was in Lisbon technically, but I was the other side of the river for most of it. So a river or water, whatever it is. So yeah, it was good trip for me. But it'll be my third time in Lisbon this year. I know I'm complaining about what a hard life I have going to foreign countries every so often, but it's I know would have been nice to mix it up, maybe see somewhere else this season, but there you go.
I'll see you next week.
Please God. Come on, you boys in green.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.